Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast of Burnt Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burntorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends where you found it, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who's taking it easy on Baylor jokes because he values his marriage, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
You know, I told my wife, I was like, look, I could even maybe like get behind rooting for a Dave Aranda Baylor team when they're not playing UT. Like I don't hate that guy. Most of the bad actors from that time are gone. But this week, no, Gerald, no, you're wrong. It's hate week, baby. No, it's really not. Let's just win this game and you know, we won't even have to worry about it. But yeah, Texas, Baylor, house divided. I know we always say my wife, but your sister too, the green and yellow and the burnt orange ties deep in the state of Texas.
Let's be honest, the better two of this generation of Goodriches did indeed go to Baylor. She also went to UVA for a time as well. So, you know, it's either here or there.
She's a smart person.
Very, very smart. Much smarter than I am. That's fine, though. It's not like my freshman football coach who taught her 4 years prior used that against me on several occasions. It's fine. It's okay. I didn't talk to my counselor about that. No, we're not here to talk about my emotional scars. We're here to talk about, well, we kind of are, my emotional scars against the Baylor Bears, because Texas, in a finale game with a chance to go to the Big 12 championship game, still on the line, as a very handsome and bearded member of this podcast said preseason, Texas has a shot to kind of take care of its business to get to the Big 12 championship game. Now, it's not a play-in game, as I said on multiple occasions, but if Texas wins, they keep themselves alive for the conference championship game. Texas will need a little bit of a help from the team that they beat the pants off of in Lawrence over the past weekend, with Kansas beating Kansas State. That would open up the door for Texas to play in the Big 12 championship game. But in order for that to even matter, Texas has to take care of Baylor on Friday. And, you know, we talked about it preseason with Matt from Between Two Bears. This Baylor team, we didn't really know what to make of them. You know, they were losing a ton of experienced talent from last year's conference championship team. And we're like, are they going to be a 10-win team or are they going to be a 6-win team? 6-5 right now coming into Austin, have the opportunity to guarantee a winning season with a win over Texas. Texas, again, keeps itself alive in the conference championship race and gets to 8 wins after going 5-7 a year ago. So this doesn't seem like, on paper, a massively consequential matchup, but there is a lot of nuance and a lot of hashtag storyline for this one.
Yeah, I mean, there is simply getting to 8 wins in the regular season and for a chance for 9 wins in a bowl, which is, again, I'd say the healthy part of the bell curve, right? You have your outliers each way, but the healthy part of the bell curve assumed that we would be an 8 or 9 win team if things went, you know, pretty well this year. That was a good year. And so this leads to the next thing. You get 8 this week, you can look at 9 next week if you can win out both of those. Bijan Robinson, you know, playing his last likely game at DKR and where he falls in the record book, so you want a good healthy game there. Texas hasn't lost back-to-back games this season, which is great. Now, can they do the winning streak thing in the second half of the season where they win 2, maybe 3 in a row? There's a narrative, Daryl. There's a lot to be talked about here. Both these teams are already bowl eligible, so it's not like Baylor is playing for their life. With Baylor losing to TCU in a heartbreaker, are they going to be coming down a little bit low? I think TCU is their biggest rival. Maybe we are. I know they also consider Texas a big rivalry game, but maybe losing that one and losing even the outside chance of a Big 12 championship appearance for themselves, maybe they're down a little bit. I don't know. I think Baylor's going to be up for this one if I had to guess, but I hope Texas will be as well.
I don't think Baylor is ever not up for this game. If there was going to be one that they weren't up, it would probably be this one. But Baylor, again, and this is not like a Texas gets every team's best shot thing, right? Because people always take issue with that. But Baylor is a team that I think, and rightfully so, I think their fans, their players, everybody likes to beat Texas. And so, but coming off of two very different losses, got absolutely housed by Kansas State 2 weeks ago, 31-3, and then honestly controlled about 95% of the game against TCU, and then TCU did what TCU does. They can't keep getting away with this. We keep saying that, but it seems like they might. 29-28 lost to TCU on a last-second field goal. A lot of confusion on the Twitter sphere about this one. TCU ran their kicking unit with like 13 or 14 seconds left in the game and managed to really have a solid and not even rushed attempt at this field goal, which is pretty impressive. Sonny Dykes had some questionable calls in that game, but that worked out really well. And no, it's not an opportunity where the defense has to sub and can slow sub. There is literally an exception in the rule books where if it's a last second field goal, the sub rules don't count like that.
Yeah, I saw Twitter going back and forth about that. It's my wife and I, she was watching the end of this game with me. And, you know, she's a Baylor fan. She worked for the football team. She's waned in her enthusiasm over the years as she's had a husband so focused on UT. And, you know, just whatever happened with Baylor and her time there was maybe not the best. But that fire gets lit up underneath you. And watching this, I know that she thinks TCU is their biggest rival because she was in disbelief at this. She's like, are they allowed to do that? And I was like, yeah, it's not smart, but they are allowed to do the fire drill type walk-off field goal. Like, it's brutal. It sucks. There was a player in the background who was like, you know, I thought he was hurt, but I think he was just broken emotionally from it. And, you know, my wife being the empath and like big-hearted person that she is, stop being upset for herself and more just like that poor guy, and was so sad for him and what he must have been experiencing at that moment. But nonetheless, look, let me just go one more tangent. If TCU was any other team in the country and they weren't TCU and maybe they're in another conference somewhere, this would be the most fun team in the country to watch. I would love watching TCU just be dumb and stupid and somehow undefeated and getting away with this BS every, like, it would be fun if it wasn't.
If this was Lane Kiffin's team, we would be having a blast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like, Sonny Dykes is likable. Like, there's a lot to like, except the fact that it's TCU and their fan base sucks. It's a bunch of actual toads. It's a bunch of like trolls who, you know, may or may not
There are some good ones. We know Tree Blossom's a good one, right?
That's it. That's the one. That's the one. No, Parker, Melissa, all of their good fans seem to be in media. I don't know if they have actual good fans who don't cover the team. But yeah, you're right. There are some fine ones, but I just feel like toads, the rest of them. But nonetheless, we're here to talk.
High percentage of toads.
Yeah, not TCU, Baylor.
It's like a fairy tale book. A lot of toads, a couple of princesses, and we'll keep it moving. So TCU this year, 0-2 against ranked teams, 3-4 against teams with winning records thus far. Number 34 in the FEI, that's the opponent-adjusted rankings there. Texas sits at number 6. S&P Plus has them at number 25, Texas at number 8. There are a team that I don't like, and I don't mean this to be reductive, but like, it's hard to pinpoint what they do well because it's kind of just it's a very Dave Aranda team where they're just like, they're solid at both offense and defense. I think the offense is better than the defense this year, which is an inverse of what it was last year. But like Blake Chapin, they jettisoned a quarterback, Jerry Bohannon, who was in Florida this year. Chapin has been fine. He's been good, completing 66% of his passes, 14-9 touchdown interception ratio. Their running backs, Richard Reese, has been good. Again, it's not like he's not lighting the world on fire. He's not Kendre Miller or Bijan Robinson, but 5 yards a carry, 14 touchdowns is a good clip. Craig Williams, not too far behind him at 503-4. Especially when you talk about the offense, like this feel, and again, I don't mean this to be reductive, but it's just like they're a football team, and like they're not like TCU is a passing team. They're a very high octane team. Texas has been kind of a tempo run team. Like Baylor is just a football team. It's like it is as smooth and featureless as the top of Dave Aranda's head.
Gosh, that's solid.
And I mean that as a good thing. Like it's just balance. Like I don't know how else to talk about it.
Yeah. Two things. Gerald, do you remember the like early 2000s mom trend of Skechers Shape Ups, the Shape Up shoes? They had kind of
I do.
Yeah, the sole went like that. For some reason, I saw Blake Chapin and I thought Blake Shape Up, and then I looked at his stats and he's exactly that. Like he's just, you know, he's a thing that you know, it might work a little bit. Like, that's a pretty, yeah, someone had a good idea. They made some money off it. That's good. All right. That's fine. He is the Shape Up of quarterbacks. Not strength shoes, which were the incredible platform shoe of the 90s, which I ran many times around the block building up my my calf game with. No, this is Shape Ups more for the mom circuit walking around the mall. So that's all you need to know there. And the other thing is, running back Richard Reese is pretty good. Like he's not a bad running back. He's mid kind of Big 12. He had a couple really big games against Kansas and TCU where he had 30 carries and you know, not a lot of yards per carry, but got a lot of yards. And so there were some Baylor fans chirping that he was the best running back in the Big 12 a couple weeks ago. You haven't heard him as much. He went 4-for-7 against OU, 9-for-54 against Kansas State, and 10-for-56 against TCU. He's a good running back, right? But they kind of seem to think they're best when they're multiple. But Gerald, he's stuck between two former football players that no one listening to this podcast knows, but you know. His name is Richard Reese. There was a running back who was after your time at Samuel Clemens named Randall Reese.
I know of Randall.
Okay. Yeah. And Ashley, married to Ashley King. Good friend of the podcast, Ashley King. Shout out to Ashley King, award-winning news journalist, former Texas journalism or Texas journalism alum,
who's Texas cheerleader too,
and Texas cheerleader, yeah, Sam McClellan's high school stand-up, and also Rashard Reeves, who was my quarterback.
So where are you going with this? Pulling out the 2009 Samuel Clemens depth chart, sir.
It's the fact that these are two people I played all the way from like peewee football with, Rashard and Randall Reese and Reeves. And now I have to watch Richard Reese, who's also 5'9", 175, you know, not a huge guy. And I don't know. I just like, it makes me want to root for him. But again, I also want nothing but bad things, in this coming week. I would love like 12 carries for, you know, 21 yards. But in Rashard or Randall, if you're listening to this, it's no shots at you. I want this particular person who's a hybrid of your names to fail demonstrably. But no, Gerald, that was an aside.
Nowhere in that rambling, incoherent paragraph was anything that resembled a coherent thought.
You just gave me the Billy Madison. We're all now more dumb for having heard. It's the holidays, Gerald. You know, living it up a little bit. Those are two players who also play the Thanksgiving game on Sam McClubbin's field on Friday morning in the past. So, you know, it is topical, just again, to like maybe five listeners tops. I will leave it alone. But yes, Richard Reese is a good running back. He's got 14 touchdowns on the season. It's just he's had a little tougher going after he kind of got it going in the middle of the season. He slowed down a little. So, you know, he will be their featured back, but I think between Craig Williams and Quaylen Jones, they have a three-headed monster that whoever's out there, they're going to try to do pretty much the same thing. None of them are Bijan level talent, but all of them are, you know, plus runners. And so I think they'll probably, this will be another week where it's two offenses who are looking to establish the run, is my guess. I think Texas does that better, and I think Texas stops it a little better, so that probably favors Texas.
And I mean, yeah, I think that's the key to the game. If you look at like the split stats for Baylor, in their six wins, they average 5 yards a carry, 243 yards per game. In their five losses, 4 yards a carry, 153 yards per game, right? Like that is the key to stopping Baylor, really, is slowing down the run. In four of their five losses this year, they just happened to be the four games that they were held under 200 yards rushing. The only loss that they have that they went over 200 was this last weekend against TCU, in a game that by all accounts they should have won, but TCU managed to do enough to win that football game. So like that to me is very, it's in all of the stuff that was good analysis from you, Kyle, that like Baylor wants to run the ball, wants to establish the run. It is a defensive coordinator's squad, and so they're going to want to control the game, control the pace of the game, and really lead through the running backs. And so again, Texas has done a really good job of shutting down the run. We talked about it on Tuesday. This is the best run defense of the last five seasons. The run defense for me at Texas is never in question. If they play like they did over the last 2 weeks against Baylor, the ball is going to be in Blake Shapen's arms to win. And not that he can't do it, because they switched to him because they thought he gave them a better downfield passing threat. But if Texas can shut down the run and Bijan can get going, we'll talk about the Texas offense versus the Baylor defense here in a minute. But like, I feel good about Texas. I never feel good about Texas going into the game. But like, if that's how it works out, and the Texas defense, the Texas run defense specifically, that showed up the last 2 weeks shows up on Saturday, I feel good about Texas's chances.
Yeah, there's a player on this Baylor offense who I think is interesting to watch as well. Ben Sims, he was a preseason all Big 12 like pick at tight end. He has 30 catches for 241, not bad numbers, but only two touchdowns. He's 6'5", 260, just a big presence. I thought he would be a lot more involved with their offense. He has a lot of games with like one catch. Of course, our luck would be the last game of the season he has a breakout or something, but he's just one weapon that they have to watch in that passing game. If I'm Shapen, and I'm, you know, looking at how does this Texas defense, you know, where's the attack point? It's kind of medium stuff over the middle on downs where they're dropping back a little bit. I think Texas can get pressure on Shapen. And so I think they either blitz or try to, again, win with the line. They'll get pressure. And when we've seen, you know, pressure's not converted to sacks by the Texas defense, a lot of times it's quarterbacks who can move a little bit, Shapen, but who can dump it off and find their checkdowns. And so will a big, giant, you know, 6'5 tight end kind of sitting in the middle be a threat? We saw Tech do a little bit with their tight ends against Texas. So it'll be just one thing to watch as we go through. Their receivers are fine. Like, they have a couple, you know, again, Big 12 level good receivers. No one great. No one like they've had in years past where they've had some NFL caliber guys who are really good. Monterey Baldwin leads that unit. But I think, again, the one just because he's a big size, pretty good hands. He's a good blocker as well. But interesting player to watch on that offense is if they are passing the ball, where Ben Sims lines up and where he is.
It's a nightmare matchup. It's why Jatavion Sanders is so good. Now, I'm not saying Ben Sims is Jatavion Sanders, but I'm saying like those types of big athletic tight ends cause problems for defense because they're too fast for linebackers. They're too big for defensive backs. And so it does create a bit of a matchup struggle. But again, I think for me, the matchup I'm watching and what I really want to see is how does Texas shut down the run? And when Blake Shapen inevitably does need to pass, does Texas make him look like a Heisman contender, or does this look more like the TCU game? Like, that is my question. Does Blake Shapen have his coming out game against Texas like so many quarterbacks seem to do, or does the Texas defense play sound enough to keep things in front of them?
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
So switching to the Baylor defense, they're good. They've not been great this year. Number 48 in points per drive, number 53 in yards per play. FEI has them as the number 45 defense in the country. Has them at the number 49 defense in the country. 131 rushing yards per game, 263 passing yards per game. It's a good, not great defense. And I think they graduated a lot of that back-end skill talent that's now in the NFL that really floated them and did a lot of the work last year. But you almost expect a Dave Aranda defense to be able to cobble something together and really, like, whoever they have. Like, I feel like Dave Aranda is like MacGyver back there. He's like the turtle version of MacGyver, where he's back there just bubblegumming and toothpicking together a top 20 defense, and it just hasn't panned out this year.
They lost a lot on this defense last year. We talked about it kind of in our season preview. Like, they, with linebackers, safety, like, have guys playing at the NFL this year. Like, they lost a lot, and it's not a bad unit, but like you said, it's just, they're there. They're going to do some stuff. They don't get the most sacks. They don't get the most interceptions, but they're okay. They're ninth in sacks with 19 in the Big 12. They have 17 takeaways, which is not bad. 13 interceptions, 4 fumble recoveries, both like pretty good. Just not elite. You don't necessarily know what scares you on this defense, but again, they're a good unit and a well-coached unit, and they're probably not going to just get destroyed, and it's probably not going to be 250 yards averaging 10 yards a carry type of easy. It'd be great if it is, again. This should be a matchup that Texas can win. This also should be a matchup that Texas can establish the run, and they can pound Ewers, and we'll see where Roshan is, if he's healthy, as we hope. We're hearing, he's trending in the right direction for senior day, that he can get some shine as well. But I think this is a game where you want to see, can Ewers air it out a little bit? Can he connect? Maybe not a bunch of deep shots, but can he connect with Whittington and Sanders underneath? Can Worthy run some routes to get him involved? Can they keep getting the ball to Keelan and let him do things in space, right? Is there someone else who's going to step up in the passing game, or you just focus on the weapons you have and maximize it, right? Can we have an efficient but good game from Ewers? Can he get 20 completions in this one, can he go 18 for 20? Like, he doesn't have to throw the ball a bunch, but can he complete a lot of those? Can they be complimentary? Can we have a really good run game? And, we know people are going to gear up to stop it. You saw TCU put 9 in the box and dare them. When they do that, can Ewers, take advantage? It doesn't have to be with the home run, with the medium ball, with the completion, with the sure thing, with the, I like that they're getting Whittington more on the screens, but it also takes him away as a blocker. But can they get it out on space behind some good blockers and get, 12 yards on a hitch? Like, great, love it. Like, do that. So I will be very curious. This Baylor defense is good, but they're attackable in the air. I think, they have safeties and linebackers who are good tacklers, and Christian Morgan has 3 interceptions on the year, but it's not the most dangerous defense that's going to, put a bunch of pressure on him or just jump a bunch of routes. So can they take advantage of that and get a little bit of rhythm going for him?
Yeah, and I almost go the opposite direction a little bit, Kyle. I feel like this is another, like, feed 5 game. Like, Baylor's only stuffing the run 15% of the time, which is incredibly low. You want your defense to be doing that way more. They're not really creating havoc plays with their front 7. And this is the stat that jumped out to me, is that they're giving up almost 1 point per successful run, which means that they're giving up big chunk plays. on the ground. So like I would love to see this be another Bijan game. Like I would love to see this be another Bijan gets 20 carries, Jonathan Brooks gets to, you know, 10 or 15, because we don't know what Roshan's gonna do. I want this to be another ground and pound game for Texas. And again, that limits the opportunities for the Baylor offense to figure something out against your defense, right? So for me, like that is another recipe for success there. You know, Baylor has thrived on interceptions this year as well, 13 interceptions this year. Like I as much as we want Quinn Ewers to get some sort of rhythm in the regular season at DKR before the end of the year, like I would much rather see a win than that.
Yeah, and I think if they go to the point where they're passing it 40 times, something has gone wrong. Like I said, I mean, even against Kansas, right, Ewers attempted 20 passes. Like, I think even if you're running the ball, just because you want a little bit of balance, he's going to be dropping back. I just wonder, can we get that to look a little bit more efficient? Can Ewers get a game where he feels confident? Because we might go into a bowl game where, you know, that's going to be needed, right? Like you need something to close out the year from your quarterback. I do think, you know, again, highlight him, celebrate him, feed Bijan, feed Jonathan, hopefully feed Roshan, give Keelan running, you know, attempts. If we're getting Jaden Blue in there, something's gone right. Like, get those guys carries. Great. I love it. I love where our offensive line seems to have taken a step up in the run blocking, where they've been traditionally a little bit better pass blockers throughout the course of this year. So I love milking that and really just leaning on a team. I think that's a great strategy. I just think no matter what, there will be times. And again, if they're going to look, Aranda's very smart. If they're going to look at what TCU did to stop Bijan to only get him 12 carries, it was put 9 guys in the box, where it's just like, it's stupid to not try a couple passes against that. You just have to be able to complete them. Can they complete them? Can they get the one-on-one coverages and win those matchups both with the receiver and the quarterback and make them respect that, where you can actually get Bijan the ball and he can have those fun runs that we all love and not have to, you know, fight 4 guys before he gets to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I would be, I know they don't like TCU very much, but I would be shocked if Aranda does not run the TCU scheme. Has Baylor run much 3-high safety this year? Because I wonder if that's, again, that's always something I'm like, is a team just going to add a third safety out there against Texas? Because it's been really, really successful against the Sarkisian offenses. So, special teams, weirdly, they've only attempted 9 field goals this year, which is weird. But like, other than that, the special teams is pretty negligible. They do have an advantage in field position. Opponents are starting on the 22 yard line instead of the 25. So like, that is an advantage for them. Which again, field position in a game like this, that could kind of be a slow it down defensive battle, is a good thing. So I'm curious to see what the special team units look like.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting because Baylor's not a great – they took one punt return back, I believe, and so that's, you know, floated a lot of their average, but they're one of the worst kick return teams in conference. Texas should have a plus because they're good at covering both of those and they're pretty good at returning both of those, so Texas should help with the field position with their returners versus Baylor's returners. But again, Baylor has broken one this season. I think it was in the early games, but nonetheless, just one thing to watch out for there, because Trejo, his only punt, yes, it was windy, but his only punt against Kansas was 23 yards. We've said he's a really good punter who's just not physically, he's not 5-star gifted with his leg. Like, he can't boot it 60 yards deep in the air. He's just really good at being a punter. Some of that is taking coaching and having just kind of natural skill, but he does a lot of things well. He just, one of them isn't, you know, a leg that punts at 80 yards. So after a 23-yard performance, I wonder, you know, are they going to go for it a little more on fourth downs where it's close, or are they going to be punting? Hopefully we don't get in that situation where we have to find out.
He is a machete, right? Like, it's not the most precise tool. It's not the most powerful tool. But when you need to hack something up, just go at it with the machete. So, Kyle, I think it's that time. The pivotal. It is 14-13. I lead the Pod Stradamus picks. Currently, you still have that one in the bag, so I need to pick up an extra this week to just make it a no-doubter. But, Kyle, what's your first Pod Stradamus pick for the regular season finale?
So when you look at what Bijan was able to do last week, and it was pretty incredible, you know, generally, right? We know that. We spent a lot of time talking about that. You also saw Texas control the game, right? They controlled The time of possession in that one, they only have done that against OU and Iowa State. And like you said, if they run it and keep the other offense off the field, that's good for both units. So I think they are going to run it. I do think Bijan is going to be the focal point. When you look at, you know, even his other two games besides TCU where he didn't go over 100 yards, he still went over 100 total yards in the pass game, Alabama, 73 yards receiving, ULM, 40 yards receiving. So he's had 100 yards every game except TCU. So what I'm thinking for this one is he came off 200 yards the last time he did it and only got 29 total yards. That was TCU. We saw what they did. That was an outlier, we think. Coming off 243 yards, I think that Bijan is going to get 150 total yards. I think get a lot of that in the run. He might get a pass or two and a touchdown. TCU also held him without a touchdown for only the second game this season. Iowa State also did that, though he was 160 yards but had zero touchdown. I think in this one he will get at least 150 with Baylor keying everything on him and a touchdown. I think he will find the end zone.
Okay. So my Podstradamus pick actually probably sets up yours as well. Like I said, also, the Baylor run defense has given up some big runs this year. And again, it's weird to see that against a Dave Aranda team. But I think that Bijan will have two rushes that we consider explosive. So two big rushes of 20 yards or more.
All right. I like that.
Synergy, we call that.
That's right. That's right. I hope Bijan gets 11 rushes of 19 yards. I'm kidding. All right. So defense, I got burned on this last week, and I know this has been your domain in the past, but I feel more comfortable that Texas, after, you know, even though TCU wasn't a win, their defensive line whipped the TCU offensive line. This is a good Baylor offensive line. They have a scheme that they kind of recruit and fill positions for that they're good. They're not a traditional, just huge line the way Kyle Flood likes them. They're kind of that zone blocking line that they're good. They're athletic. They're good, but I think they're beatable, especially if Texas turns this into a game where Shapen's having to drop back. I think it's a chance for Texas to get home. So if the game plan and game flow goes the way I like it, Texas runs the ball well, throws it a couple times efficiently, gets some scores early, and forces Baylor to have to throw the ball. And if that's the case, they pin back their ears and they get two sacks or more.
I like it. I like it. I like it. So I am – Baylor has, in all of their conference games but one, the Iowa State win to start conference play, has had at least one turnover, and that includes four games with two or more turnovers. So I think Baylor is going to turn the ball over twice against Texas.
All right. Two turnovers. I like it. I like it. All right. So to recap, we have 150 yards and a touchdown for Bijan, plus two rushes of 20 for Bijan for Gerald, two sacks for Kyle for the Texas defense, and two turnovers for the Baylor defense. If all of those things happen, Gerald, that sounds like a surefire recipe for a win to me.
We've said it before, and we say it again. A lot of our Podstradamus picks are generally through the lens of things that Texas can do to win the game. So we'll be back on Friday, not Saturday, for our post-game live stream following the early kick against the Baylor Bears. We'll see you then on Twitter and Facebook.
All right, Gerald, now it's time to take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. Let's start where we start every week, a little bit around the country. We just talked about, obviously, the crazy TCU-Baylor football game, but in the rest of the Big 12, I think we were all sad to see West Virginia not able to get the senior night bounce and beat Kansas State, which would have really helped us. And again, we said we don't hate those guys, but 48-31, Kansas State just kind of romped West Virginia Tech in an absolute just terrible game to watch, I'm sure, 14-10 over Iowa State. And then speaking of not being watched, maybe the lowest engagement, least national impact, even though one of the teams technically was ranked, Oklahoma 28 to Oklahoma State 13, and Mike Gundy continues to just not have a great record in Bedlam.
The weirdest thing to me is that OU jumped out to a 28-0 lead and had to sweat this one out. Like, it felt like they were watching the Texas game a little bit, where they put up four touchdowns and then just stopped scoring. And after a summer of hearing that, like, the Jeff Lebby offense is going to be great, Lincoln who, like, it's just, you want to choke on the schadenfreude a little bit.
There's not a much better way that this game could go than Oklahoma State feels really bad and OU gets a win but still doesn't feel good about themselves. Like, that's kind of the win-win that we're all looking for. In the SEC, speaking of wins, South Carolina, I think they get two wins for this one. Just stomped a mud hole in Tennessee, 63-38. And speaking of former OU associates, that guy out east, I guess, TBOE is what we're calling Spencer Rattler. I don't know, who went to the other coast. Spencer Rattler went God mode against Tennessee, a playoff team. I mean, Gerald, if you told me you had a $5 bet on this one, I would tell you you're a very rich man. No one saw this coming.
I think one of the voices I respect the most in college football discourse right now is Richard Johnson. I mentioned him. He writes for Sports Illustrated. He's on ESPN occasionally on the SEC Network, but he also, I mentioned the Split Zone Duo on Tuesday. It's one of my favorite podcasts. They just kind of, the way they approach football is very academic and very very nuanced, so I appreciate their look at it. And he said it in the season previews, like, I don't know if South Carolina is going to be good, but Spencer Rattler is just too talented to not go supernova one week, and this was the supernova. Like, this was Spencer Rattler just being at, like, the kid just absolutely flat out balled. Like, there's no two ways around it. Like, he just blew up and it was incredible to watch. Pause. We also, I want to say, like, Hendon Hooker, I feel so bad for that kid. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Non-contact injury, ACL. Like, it was just, yeah. Like, he was one of the bright spots in this college football year for a lot of people, and it absolutely sucked that, like, he blows his knee pivoting, fumbles the ball, and it just adds to the deluge that is what South Carolina is doing, because they picked it up and then scored two plays later.
It wasn't everything that could go wrong for Tennessee did go wrong kind of game. And yeah, I hate it for Hendon Hooker. I don't like injuries for anyone ever, but I mean, a guy who's just fun to watch, who's putting up a Heisman caliber season, who, you know, was really, you know, lighting up the NFL draft board. So hopefully can recover fully and go on with that. Another quarterback who, you know, has been up and down the draft boards. At one point, Will Levis was potentially the number one quarterback pick, people were saying, even over kind of the more known entities at Alabama and at Ohio State. But Kentucky offense didn't look like much. I know that Georgia defense is good, but somehow the Kentucky defense looked pretty good, holding Georgia to just 16 points. They just, nothing really happened. 16-6, UGA squeaks past Kentucky, which was the exact opposite of Arkansas just going and bringing out the Spencer Hall wampum stick, 42-27 over Lane Kiffin's Ole Miss.
There was a lot of talk that Lane Kiffin was 1 foot out of the door already for this one, but I just think this is what Arkansas is built to do. Like, they are Sam Pittman in player form. And on the Kentucky game, quit extending coaches that haven't brought home trophies. Quit doing it. That's another one where they're going to be stuck with a terrible contract. And granted, Kentucky football is fine with, like, 8-4 every year, but, like, this is not that year. And you just extended the guy.
The biggest rival for Kentucky football apparently is Kentucky basketball. John Calipari and Stoops getting into it on Twitter will always be fun postseason, peak postseason. Gerald, those were all good SEC games, but there were two more SEC games of note that we should talk about. First, we want to talk about Vanderbilt beating University of Florida 31-24 to ensure that they themselves won't finish bottom in the SEC. And Gerald, do you know who that means will finish bottom of the SEC?
A team that couldn't reach three scores against UMass?
That's them, Gerald. A 20-3 victory for the Aggies. Gets them their fourth win. They're crucial.
4-8. 4-8.
Beautiful, 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 beautiful football game. It was like 9 degrees. It was wet. It was windy. But there was a point, like, I love the Aggie. Like, I love the mentality. They're just such a brainwashed, sick cult. There was like a group of people who stuck it out to watch the band do the same routine that they've done exactly the same for the past 50 years. That's like fine. It's not great. The Longhorn band is definitely better. But to do their little precision band routine, and then they left after the band to not watch the football team for the second half. Like, legitimately, it looked like a youth soccer game attendance. Like, there was a couple fans in camp chairs, you know, that they popped out on the sidelines. Like, there was like 5,000 people in their 100,000 person field. It was baffling. Like, I looked at so many pictures and I thought it was Photoshop. Like, it was wild.
It's like a bad HBCU game, like watching them leave after halftime, except the HBCU bands are fun to watch.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Much like the Aggie offense, the Aggie band is just not fun. They're fine. They do the thing they're supposed to do, which is not like the Aggie offense, but they're just not fun. There's nothing fun about them. If you've seen them once, you've seen them 100 times, and really you should never see them once. Let's keep it moving, Gerald. A couple games in Michigan. Just, you know, good teams having tough weeks. Ekes it out against Illinois. I thought they were going to lose that one. 19-17 on the last minute field goal. Similar to the TCU eking it out against Baylor. USC exploded over UCLA, where, you know, points were not hard to come by. They each got close to 50 in that one, but UCLA looks likely to keep their playoff hopes alive. And again, weird how Caleb Williams and Lincoln Riley are still good, and it wasn't, you know, the crimson on their shirt and the Bubba's Country Cooking in that Norman's famous for, or whatever, that made them good. Oregon also in that conference got past Utah 2017. That looks to be the conference championship there. And then a sad one for people who root for Mac Brown, because he's a great guy who did great things at UT. He is just absolutely Case McCoy, run against Texas A&M in that last game is basically how Mac has run this season, just kind of stumbling and bumbling to great success all the way through to 9-1. It finally, the rent came due and they fell to interim coach Georgia Tech 21-17. They shut down the Drake May experience, and yeah, it was tough days for Mac.
Interim coaches get that bump sometimes, and it bit Mac in the keister. Can't always can't expect to win all your clunkers if every one of them is a clunker.
Jared, we mentioned it when we were recording our Tuesday show on Monday night, because it was going as we were recording. But we have another Texas win. They improved 4-0 with a Texas basketball win with a 73-48 victory over Northern Arizona down in the Valley. Again, part of the Leon Black Classic. This was, you know, didn't need to be a close game, and it wasn't. Marcus Carr had a second consecutive good game, 17 points, 4 assists, 3 steals. Just looking like he's really benefiting from having another guard on the floor with him. And Hunter was in double digits, Dylan Dessou, 10. Timmy Allen, 4 points. He's basically had 6 in his past 2 games, hoping he gets it going. But he did have 10 rebounds. He does all the things to make you win, which is great. And yeah, I mean, good team win, 73 points, held them under 50, kind of did all the things you want to. 3-point shooting was regressed from where we thought it was, but it was also better than the first two at just under 39, or at just under 30% at 29. So maybe an answer to, are they a 39% every night shooting team as they did against Gonzaga? Probably not, but can they get that closer to 35? Can they be every night 33-35? Will be what we're watching the rest of the year. One big piece of news, Gerald, I wanted to give. Asia O'Neill announced she's returning for her 5th year. She didn't participate with senior day with the team, and basically will be coming back for that COVID year, 5th year. She's eligible for, which I think is fantastic. We get more Jermaine O'Neill at the games. We get more Asia O'Neill, who has such an incredible story herself, right? And she will be a featured key part of the team in the middle of that defense and offense.
It's not, you can never be upset by getting that force in the middle back, especially as you try to figure out what your offense looks like without Logan Eggleston. Having her back there for Texas is invaluable to Jared Elliott and that squad.
Love that. Softball exes, Janae Jefferson and Shannon Rhodes led Team USA to a 9-0 sweep for a gold medal in the Pan Am Championships. Both of them hit well, played well. The whole team looked good. Team USA keeps their number one ranking in the world intact. And DeMarvian Overton and Roshan Johnson both accepted invites to the Senior Bowl. So I think if you're like, you're not a surefire top 15 draft pick, it's good to go to the Senior Bowl. You saw it work out for guys like Taquan Graham in years past. I mean, I think both of these guys.
Puna Ford is a guy who made some money there.
Absolutely. Great call. And I think like the people who run that bowl are such respected voices, Nagy and all of them, that this is like, you go and you, it's a game and you do well in the game. That's great. But it's the week of practice with scouts seeing you, with the guys who really, you know, GM's opinion, you know, they put a lot of stock in. It's an important game, and I think it'll be important for both of them, especially Roshan, a guy who has had to sit behind Bijan Robinson and otherworldly talent and has done everything that's been asked of him. He's likely, him or Keelan, our two running backs, our best special teams player. Roshan had a hit stick on a kick coverage a couple of weeks ago, like just does everything. And I think, you know, GMs will love him, but I think when people actually see him, when scouts see him running the ball as a proper running back, all the things he can do, they're going to realize like, oh, he's a lot more than, you know, Bijan's backup. And so I'm excited for both of them to get a shot. And again, hopefully to hear their name called in the draft in a couple months, couple weeks coming up, not too distant future.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about how Roshan Johnson is going to be a guy who tests really well, who looks really well, and that GMs are going to love. So I'm excited to see them get the shine that they deserve.
All right, Gerald, let's close it out with a little bit of Godzilla Tron. What have you been watching on your giant screen?
Didn't do a ton of watching this week. We drove down, road tripped it over Saturday, and then we spent some time with family and all of that. So not a ton of watching. I listened to, outside of the Texas football game, I mentioned months back that I started the Mistborn series. It was a fantasy series by Brandon Sanderson, who's kind of one of the bigger names in fantasy. I never gotten into it because all of his stuff is really epic fantasy-ish as far as like scale, and I just like don't always have the patience for like a 40-hour audiobook or whatever, but I decided to like just grit my teeth and do it, and it's been good. It's not as good as the original, but generally middle books and trilogies are setting up a lot for the finale. So I'm into the final third of the book, and I'm enjoying it so far. But that's kind of my big one for the week.
I love it. It's the holidays. I haven't watched too much. Just we're hosting, have a lot stuff going on. We finished Peaky Blinders, which is great. New season was great. I originally thought this was the last season. I've heard there's a film coming out. There's a character that's based on JFK's dad as like the American politically tied potential gangster person. It's kind of funny when you remember how certain dynastic families made their money. Great season. Just a great show. I love the way it looks, love the sound of it, love everything. Finished is the World Cup is coming. Been watching soccer in a lot of my free time. Finished reading Net Gains, which I talked about, by Ryan O'Hanlon. It's a great book. He's a great Twitter follow during the World Cup. Again, he gives analysis, but he also data driven stuff. So if you like soccer, you like data, it's a good follow. And again, it's a great book. So finish that up. And then our next show, we haven't started it yet, but wife and I just decided we're going to start Atlanta. Haven't watched the latest season, so we're going to start back from the beginning and work our way through, because that's such a just savor it show. There's like a fine wine. So we're going to be doing that next. So prepare for some Atlanta and Teddy Perkins takes.
I'm excited for it, Kyle. I've saved up the final season. I'm going to binge it here in the next couple of weeks, so we might hit it at the same time. But that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on twitter.com, as long as that site exists, at Kyle Carpenter, as well as follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at GH Goodridge. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod, Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. We will be back on Friday for our post-game recap. We'll be live on Facebook and Twitter. You can catch us there. And then we'll obviously be back in your podcast feeds on Tuesday with our full game breakdown. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em, and also rock chalk. Beat the heck out of those Kansas State Wildcats, Kansas.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.